Tammy said, I texted, Brad said he's feeling better. Texted Tammy today. She's apparently been pretty rough, but she said today she had more energy. Just out. Tiffany's out because of that. So Tracy's gone to Florida. So anyhow, four of them out. So we will review a little bit. We're real quick through these, like I did last time. It's got to get us caught up. At the crucifixion, of course, the veil from the temple was rent from top to bottom, exposing and opening up access to the most holy place. We talked about that quite a bit. Other miracles that went on with the earthquake, the darkness, the rock split, tombs were open, people came out, went to the city that had been dead before. Then the centurion said, truly this was the Son of God. We asked the question, what made this Roman make such a statement? And why didn't he say, just read the inscription off the top, and say, you know, truly this was the King of the Jews. That's not what he said. Truly this was the Son of God. So he had heard something, knew something from before. So same, Satan wins now. Jesus is dead. It's over. Satan wins. Go back to Genesis 3:15 and what Satan would do based on that all the way back there. But history doesn't end there, so we keep going. The Jews don't want the bodies left on the crosses for the Sabbath. It should be the next day. They're crucified, die late on Friday. So Pilate sends the soldiers to break their legs, which we talked about what that would do in their crucifixion process to make them die. When they got there, Jesus was dead already. The spear through his side, they're making sure he was dead. There's no swooning, as the word has been used, that he was almost kind of dead, but came back to life. Joseph and Nicodemus, two members of the Sanhedrin, then step up and come, and Joseph asks Pilate for the body, takes it down, and Nicodemus brings the spices, and they put it in a nearby tomb, a tomb that had never been used before, so there's no other body in there. The only one was put in there was Jesus. When it was empty because Jesus is the one that came out. And then the ladies are coming then on Sunday morning for spices to anoint the body, and that's what we'll get into tonight. Who's going to roll away the stone for them? So Pilate seals it, so it's going to be a whole issue tonight when it comes to rolling away the stone. Who's going to do it for us? Well, Pilate had sealed it because didn't want the disciples to come and steal the body. There's a Roman guard posted to make sure they don't come to that. So everything now ceases because the Sabbath day is coming up next. Two places that are looked at for the place of the crucifixion. For a long time, I think the one at the top, called the Garden Tomb, thought this one more so now. I'll talk about it. But we looked at this, the Garden Tomb, standard thing you see a lot of times when you think about the burial place. Now, go back to this one a minute and look where this is located. See the temple? Well, now the Dome of the Rock sits on top of that. The big gold-looking dome you see when you look at it sits here. All right, this is east of that. So watch this slide right here. Here's the Dome of the Rock here. This is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre that sits on top of what is thought to be the place where the crucifixion and burial really are. This kind of supersedes, from what I understand by most scholars, excluding the scholar Steve Klein, this is where they can be, that one. Tombs, something like this, these are above ground, but you're going to see one down below ground, a picture Steve took a little later on. But it'll be tombs more like this, not one like the ground. So we'll get into tonight's lesson. I got a little picture or two of the tomb, and I'll talk more about that. So we are now coming out of the last week period, of the periods of the life of Christ, the seven, down to the last one, the resurrection and exaltation. So tonight we get into the resurrection. Christ didn't stay in the tomb. Christ is raised. So very early on the first day of the week, there's a great earthquake. Angel descends from heaven, appearance like lightning, clothing white as snow. And Cal comes and rolls back the tomb with a stone. Well, I'm having a hard time tonight. Rolls back the stone and sat on it. Matthew 28, first two verses. And we're in the last chapter almost of every of the Gospels. John, I think, being the exception. After the Sabbath, first day of the week began to dawn. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to the tomb. There was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven, came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it. Matthew 28, 1 and 2. Second earthquake. Earthquake back at the crucifixion, another earthquake now. So Christ is risen, tomb is going to be empty, we'll look at it in a minute. For right now, the angels come, roll back the stone, he's sitting on the stone. What about the Roman guard? Well, they fainted with fear. Matthew 28, verse 4. The guard shook for fear and became like dead men when the angel came and the earthquake occurred. We don't have a lot of details about the resurrection. What can you say other than he came out and the tomb is empty? The big thing is what's going to be preached all through Acts. And if you go through Acts and just look at it, starting here in Acts chapter 2, you've taken by lawless hands, Peter telling the Jews, him, Jesus, you've taken by lawless hands, crucified, put him to death, whom God raised up. And you see that phrase all through Acts, multiple times, whom God raised up, whom God raised up. You crucified, God raised up. You crucified, God raised up. Till you get to Acts chapter 10, which is with Cornelius, and it's not you crucified, it's then they crucified, the Jews, and God raised him up. So that's what's preached over and over and over. God raised him up. That's the key point of the resurrection. So the Sabbath's over, and now it's early on the first day of the week. So the women come to anoint the body with more spices, and they wonder, who's going to roll away the stone for? If you remember, the women were there at the crucifixion, and they watched to see what they were going to do with the body. So they knew where the body was, in that tomb. You go back to some of the stuff last time. So they're wondering, who's going to roll away the body? And there's nothing said that they ask anything about the Roman guard that was there, or the seal on it. They're just worried about getting the stone rolled back. So Mark 16, when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, Salome, brought spices that they might come and anoint him. Very early in the morning on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. They said among themselves, who will roll away the stone from the door of the tomb? So who's going to roll it back? When they arrived at the tomb, there's no Roman guards. We'll talk about them more just in a minute. And the stone is taken away. And this is a typical looking tomb with a stone cover. We've got a couple more pictures of a typical looking thing where the stone would roll across the door. The stone is gone. In this case, Mary Magdalene goes to tell the disciples about it. There are two men there in white apparel, and one of them is sitting on the stone. So you would think maybe the stone is laid down to sit on it. Don't know. So you go to Luke 24. I know we bounce it around a lot, but picking it up. First day of the week, very early in the morning, they and certain other women with them came to the tomb bringing spices, which they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. They went in and did not find the body of Jesus. It happened when they were greatly perplexed about this. Behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. Then, as they were afraid and bowed their faces to the earth, they said to them, why do you seek the living among the dead? So here's another picture of a stone. So it's kind of encased to roll back to cover the opening to the grave. This is more of a plug. I'll show you this one because I'm going to show you the tomb picture Steve took of what's thought to be near the tomb of Jesus. It's going to be more, you would think, something like this. So I don't know if a Greek word for rolled could be, you know, move, slid, whatever. I don't know, but it seemed like it would slide in. So this is the garden tomb we're used to looking at. This is a picture taken by Steve down under the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where I showed you a while ago. That's the more prominent place now for where the burial was. Steve described this, said it's a tomb in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is described as being Jesus' neighbor's tomb. So tomb nearby, very nearby where the tomb, they think the tomb is. And now it's down below ground because it's Jerusalem's been destroyed multiple times. The debris covered up. So you have to go down to get to the layer where this is actually a picture taken by. So, women are there. One of the men speaks and tells them that Jesus is not there. He is risen. It reminds them that Jesus told the disciples early on what's going to happen. Go back to Luke chapter 9. So we're backing up several chapters back. If we remind them of this, the Son of Man must suffer many things, be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the scribes, be killed, be raised the third day. Jesus had told them that. In fact, he had told them that multiple times. Well, now the angel is reminding them of that, what Jesus said, he would be raised. He had told them that. So Luke 24, starting in verse 6, he is not here, but risen. Remember how he spoke to you when he was with you in Galilee, saying, the Son of Man must be delivered to the hands of sinful men, be crucified the third day, and rise again. And they remembered his words. Then they returned from the tomb and told all these things to the 11. So they're going back now and telling the others. The women remembered what they were told. So they go back and tell Peter and the others that Jesus would meet them in Galilee and see them there. So now, we need to stop just a minute and think. What's the emotion going through these women's minds as they are there at the tomb and it's empty and they don't know where Jesus is and there's somebody there saying he's risen. He's not here anymore. Fear? Amazement? Joy? I don't know what else to put up there. Let me read you two or three verses. From Mark 16, verse 5. Entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. Matthew 28:8. They went out quickly from the tomb, and fear and great joy ran to bring the disciples' word. Luke 24:4. It happened that they were greatly perplexed about this. Behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. Then, as they were afraid, bowed their faces to the earth, said to them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead?" So all kind of emotions are going through their minds as they know they saw him on, you got to keep this in your mind, they know they saw him on the cross, they know they saw him crucified, they probably were there and saw him pierced with the Roman spear, because they were there and knew where he was buried. And now they go to that tomb, and there's two angels there, two men in white apparel, saying, "He's not here. He told you he's going to rise from the dead, and he did. He'll see you in Galilee. He's not here." Got to be some high emotions going on, trying to figure out what's really going on. So Mary Magdalene goes back and tells Peter and John, and says they've taken the Lord, and we don't, notice this, we don't know where they've laid him. What does that indicate? They think somebody has moved him from one place to another where they've laid him. They still don't get the fact he's alive, risen from the dead. We don't know where they've laid him. So Peter and John take off, and they go toward the tomb to see what they can find. John stops and then go in. Peter comes along behind him because John outran him to get there. And Peter goes in, and then John goes in behind him. And they see the grave clothes there, and the cloth is across his face, separate from the others, neatly folded there at the tomb. I'm going to take time to read it. If you look at John 20, the first 10 verses, it's what tells about this, what they just seen, the handkerchief been around his head, not lined with linen cloth, folded into a place by itself. Verse 8, the other disciple, John, who came to the tomb first, went in also, and he saw and believed, for as yet they did not know the scripture, he must rise from the dead. All the disciples went to their own houses. They go home. They see the angel. I don't know. Nothing said about Peter and John seeing them. But the verse I just read you, John saw and believed. So they leave the tomb. What's going through Peter and John's mind? We don't know. It's so different for us looking back on it. You're there, living it. It happened. What's going through your mind? So after the resurrection, there are a number of appearances to various ones of the disciples and others. Paul recounts a lot of this in 1 Corinthians 15, first several verses. We're going to look at two of them tonight, and then next week we'll get into the more lengthy ones, the road to Emmaus and some of those others. So Mary Magdalene goes back to the tomb, and the two appearances, to Mary Magdalene, the other women, and then the ones in Great Olivet we'll see next time. So Mary Magdalene goes back to the tomb, and the angels ask her why she's weeping. After all, what has she been told? He's risen from the dead. Like, why are you weeping? They've taken him. I don't know where they laid him. Still hasn't understood it. So Jesus is behind her, and well, I just talked about it in the last slides in John 20, verses 11 through 13. Why are you weeping? They take him away, don't know where they laid him. So Jesus is behind her and speaks to her, and she doesn't recognize him. She thinks he's the gardener, somebody that's just there behind her. So he calls her by name, does, and then she realizes who it is. So he tells her, go tell the others. So she goes back and says, I have seen the Lord. So apparently she was the first one to actually see Jesus alive. This is John 20, 14 through 18. She turned around and saw Jesus standing there. Didn't know it was Jesus. Woman, why are you weeping? Who are you seeking? Thought he was the gardener. Sir, if you carried him away, tell me where you put him. He said to her, Mary. She turned and said, Rabboni, teacher. He told her, do not cling to me. I have not yet ascended to my Father, but go tell the brethren, tell them, I am sending to my Father and your Father and my God and your God. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord, and he has spoken these things to her. So now somebody has actually seen him and talked to him after the resurrection. So some of the other women go to the tomb. Jesus greets them. They fall at his feet, worshiping him. He again tells them, go tell the disciples, the others, to go to Galilee. I'll see you there. And now there's joy. They're beginning, I think, seem to catch on to it. So from Matthew 28, starting in verse 5, the angel answered and said to the women, do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He is risen. And he said, come and see the place where the Lord lay. Go quickly and tell his disciples he is risen from the dead. And indeed, he's going before you to Galilee. You'll see him there. Behold, I have told you. So they went out and quickly from the tomb, and fear with great joy ran and brought the word to the disciples. Okay, I've been rattling a lot. If I got thoughts up to now, we're going to deal with these Roman soldiers. The actual resurrection, his appearance. I'm zipping through stuff pretty fast, finished early. Okay, these Roman guards, they were stunned, fell back as dead men earlier. We mentioned that. Well, now they've realized what's happened, okay, that Jesus, the stone's rolled back, the seal is broken, the stone rolled back, and Jesus is gone. He's not there. So they go tell the chief priests and the rulers. And you got to think about, okay, what are they thinking? Their worst fear has now come to pass because they were afraid all along the disciples would come and steal the body and say he had risen. So that's exactly what looks like it happened. So they told this Roman soldier, you're to say someone stole the body while we slept. Well, that's a pretty heavy thing to think if you think about Roman soldiers sleeping while they're on duty. That's going to mean death for them probably. So they bribe them and say, we'll give you money. We'll give you money and we'll take care of Pilate. We'll cover things up with him. So that's exactly what word went out. The disciples came and stole the body. That's what they're doing. So back to Matthew 28 again. While they were going, behold, some of the guards came into the city and reported to the chief priests the things that happened. When they assembled the elders and consulted together, they gave them large sums of money to the soldiers, saying, tell them his disciples came at night and stole them away while we slept. If this comes to the governor's ears, we'll appease him and make you secure. We'll take care of you. So they took the money and did as they instructed. And look at the last part of verse 15. And this saying is commonly reported among the Jews until this day. The time Matthew was writing, that's still the common thought that was out, that Jesus came and the disciples came and stole the body. It was reported by the Jewish leader. After all, which is easier to believe? A man literally risen from the dead, or the disciples stole a body to make it look like it happened? Which one would you believe if you were an average Jew? Well, it's pretty easy to get somebody to believe the second one. Nobody's going to believe the first one. Well, they might if they saw Lazarus. So now, think about Peter's sermon 50 days from now, Acts chapter 2. He's going to accuse them of this heinous crime of killing the one that God raised up. Acts chapter 2, verse 23. Him, Jesus, being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken and by lawless hands have crucified and put to death, whom God raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible he should be held by it. Verse 32, this Jesus God has raised up, of which we're all witnesses, because they have seen him more since then than what we are now. Therefore, being exalted to the right hand of God, having received from the Father the promise of the Holy Spirit, he poured out this which you see and hear. That would be the speaking in tongues. So Peter's going to preach just 50 days later, you killed him lawlessly, and God raised him up. Okay, to be very honest, think about it. At this point, not looking back from 2,000 years later, if you were there at this point, do you believe he had been raised from the dead? Yourself in place of these disciples. Now Mary does because she's seen him and spoken to him. And she's told the others, but it's evident most of them didn't believe her, not start with. So what would you believe right now? Would you believe he rose from the dead? What'd she ask? Tell me where you've laid him, where have you moved him to? Peter and John, the other apostles. Remember they went home, went back to their houses. Sure exactly what that means because they were from Galilee and they go back to Galilee. Are you there, but they go back to their houses? You haven't seen him yourself. Word is spreading that you took the body and did something with it. You stole the body. That's what everybody's saying. That's what all your neighbors believe. Well, you know you didn't. So what do you believe in? It's going through your mind if you're there. Three passages we'll look at right quick. I'll finish up what I've got. From Mark 16, starting at verse 9. When he rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven demons. She went and told those who had been with him as they mourned and wept. When they heard that he was alive, had been seen by her, they did not believe. Verse 11. After that, he appeared in another form to two of them as they walked and went to the country. They went and told the rest, but they did not believe them either. Verse 13. And later, he appeared to the 11 as they sat at table. Those more next. Luke 24, verse 9. Then they returned from the tomb and told all these things to the 11 and all the rest. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and other women with them who told these things to the apostles. And their words seemed to them like idle tales, and they did not believe them. Luke 24, verse 11. And then from John 20, verse 27, this is a little later on, after he had appeared, we'll get this next time, after he appeared to the apostles, and Thomas was not there, now Thomas is there. He said to Thomas, reach your finger here, look at my hands, reach your hand here, put it to my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas answered, said to him, my Lord and my God. And Jesus said to him, Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Thoughts? Where we are? Anybody? Okay. A couple of points right quick. If you're teaching someone, where are you going to start? Of course, it all depends, I know, on the person and what they know and what they don't know and whatever. But it's a couple of thoughts. Of course, from Acts chapter 8, Philip with the eunuch. Who's the prophet? Say this about himself or another man. Philip opened his mouth, began this scripture, did what? Preach Jesus to him. When he did that, what's it going to include? The death, burial, the resurrection. Preach Jesus to him. These very things we're talking about here. And then next time we'll get about the men going to Emmaus, and Jesus appeared along and going with them. And they're talking about what's been going on. Jesus acts like he doesn't know what's going on, and they start explaining to him. So verse 27, this is Luke 24, verse 27. Jesus, beginning at Moses and the prophets, expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. What scriptures would that be? Old Testament, right? Beginning at Moses and the prophets, expounded to them all the things in the scripture. We don't have a New Testament concerning himself. So when he's telling them, explaining to them what's been going on in Jerusalem, this thing they're talking about as they go along the road, he goes back to Moses and the prophets and tells all the things about that they said about him. And when I made this slide up a long time ago, that was our theme of the loss. 3 years back or 6 years back, it's been 3 years like, I would imagine. And that's what I've got. So now you've got to talk. Tim, if you want to stop it, you can. I'll turn this off. Or we'll feel that talk.
stuff, but I started back on the slide that talks about the appearances. I'm going to talk about more about that just in a minute. We'll get to another slide, but going back and look at the appearances we've already talked about after the resurrection. Mary Magdalene, the other women, Mary went back to the tomb. The angels will know why she, one of the angels will know why she's weeping. They've taken the Lord. I don't know where they put him. She thought they had moved the body somewhere. Resurrection was out of her mind. Okay. Jesus is behind her, speaks to her. She don't recognize it. Thinks she's the gardener. And then he calls her by name, and she realizes it's the Lord. So then she's the first one to have seen him alive. Was Mary Magdalene when she went back to the tomb. So other women, Jesus greets them. They fall at his feet, worshiping. So a group of women this time saw him. And he tells everybody to go back to Galilee and I'll meet you there. So they keep that in mind. We're going to hear that later. We get it tonight. So they now realize that, he's risen. But it's going to be hard. We're going to see that tonight. Hard for them to understand that's really what's happened. Okay. So, last 18. We got three other appearances to look at, so we'll start with them tonight. The first one is on the road to Emmaus. Jerusalem in the middle with the arrow there, and the probable site of Emmaus is off to the west, northwest a little bit on the map there. This is Jerusalem back up into here. This is the old road that comes down to Emmaus. There's a new highway that way, but this is the road that comes down here. They'll be coming from Jerusalem down to Emmaus there. This is a picture from that village in the early 1900s. You kind of see what it looks like for all the current modernization that you saw on the last slide up there. So this is still on the first day of the week. It's still the day he arose. And there are two disciples leaving Jerusalem, going back to their home in Emmaus. And they're talking about, obviously, like everybody would be, what's been going on in Jerusalem, particularly if you're a disciple of Jesus. What's happened to him? He's been crucified. And now there's somewhere getting out of it. He's risen and he's not in the tomb anymore. So they're talking about it. So this stranger comes in and joins up with them and says, what are you talking about? What's going on? And they're amazed. He's going the same direction they are, coming out of Jerusalem. You've been in Jerusalem all this time and you don't know what's going on in Jerusalem, all the talks about and everything. And he says, what things? Of course, it's Jesus that's talking to them. They don't know that, though. So they tell him what's been happening and what they were expecting to come from the Messiah, which didn't, of course, and then what had really happened to him, that he'd been killed by the Romans. And then this part here. He scolded them and rehearsed them all the prophets had said about him. Can you imagine hearing Jesus going back and picking up with the prophets and telling all the things as they walk along that the prophets had said would happen to him, about him, the whole story being revealed by Jesus himself? To these two disciples, as they walk along, he rehearsed to them all the things the prophets had said about him, which I'm sure would include his death, burial, and resurrection. So they're going along amazed at this conversation. So they get to Emmaus, and was the common thing then, there was a stranger going along and needed a place to stay. We see the phrase a lot in the New Testament, given to hospitality. So they invited him in to stay the night with them. As they were eating the meal, their eyes were opened, and they realized it's Jesus. You just got to put yourself there to think how they would have felt and reacted when they think about the flash into their mind the last few minutes as they've been walking on this road. He's been telling them all these things the prophets have said about him, and then you realize it's him, okay? It's him. He just told me all about what was going to happen. He just rehearsed it to me. Jesus himself. So he vanished. He's gone. They leave immediately and go back to Jerusalem to tell the other disciples, that we see the Lord. He's risen. We talked to him. And this phrase here, did not our hearts burn within us while he taught with us on the road and while he opened the scriptures to us? That was their reply, their thought. Our hearts burned within us as he opened the scriptures to us, as he told us from the scriptures about himself. Our hearts burned within us. So a little question on the side here. Have you ever heard a sermon where your heart just melted inside? It could be any number of things. It could be a sermon about heaven and the blessing and how great it's going to be. And you're just sitting there just entranced in it, the lesson there, and you're inside just. Or it could be some sin that the preacher's preaching about, and it hits you, and your heart's hit with it. The phrase is, our hearts burn within us as he opened the scriptures to us. So they get back to where the disciples are, and before they can tell their side of the story, Peter talks about the fact he's now seen the Lord. And so they talk, understand that. But here's the big thing. At this point, where even with Peter having seen him, the women have seen him, now these two disciples have come back and see him, they still don't believe as a group. They still don't believe as a group that he is really alive. They can't imagine it. I mean, you got to put yourself. We look back and we see it now. Yeah. Oh, why did they? Put yourself back there. Mark 16:13. They went and told it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. They just can't get it. He's really risen from the dead. It's him. So that same evening, you got the resurrection, that first day of the week, the other appearances we talked about, this trip to Emmaus, they've come back to Jerusalem, and that's late in the evening there. They were eating, I don't know exactly who. Sometimes the word disciples is used to talk about just the core group, or it could be a broader group of people, including the apostles and some of the other disciples. They were eating, and Jesus appeared in their midst with them there. And at this point, they still thought it was a ghost because they still don't have it in their mind that he's risen from the dead, even at this point. So he says, touch me. Does a ghost have flesh and bones? And I thought about this part quite a bit. If God had the power to raise Jesus from the dead, and he did, okay, could he not have risen, put the body back with all the scars healed up and whatever? Why did he leave it would be scars at this point. It would be wounds, I guess. Why did he leave those there? Well, you've got to know this is the same person who was on the cross, okay? So they're all there. So he shows them his hands, his feet. Well, the nails were in there. And then Luke 22:44 talks about all the things, which is talking about Jesus rehearsing all the prophets said about him. This passage makes the point that everything and the law, the prophets, and the Psalms, they're all named individually. Sometimes you get the law and the prophets as an inclusive type thing of the Old Testament. This time it names the law, the prophets, and the Psalms. And you might think about We've had a lot of things in the Psalms that we've talked about that involve the crucifixion and the things surrounding it. You know, referenced a number of times in the Psalms. So maybe that's why they're listed out separate here. But all things in the concerning him have now been fulfilled. Jesus came to fulfill the law, not. The next verse says, he opened their understanding that they might comprehend the scriptures. Let that digest a minute. He opened their understanding that they might comprehend the scriptures. What scriptures? Well, all these prophecies he's talked about with the two guys going to Emmaus. Everything is in the law, the Psalms, and the prophets and the Psalms about him. He opened their eyes, opened their understanding that they might comprehend the scriptures. So there is a lesson here, I think, too. And those who are teaching the old ones that are old enough to understand this, we don't just read this through the scriptures. We need to read with comprehension. We need to understand. Okay, to comprehend means to mentally grasp something. It's complete nature and meaning. So we read it to comprehend it. Marcia, she knew I was saying this, particularly if it was being recorded. Marcia called me last night and she's working on Romans for your group? No, yeah, okay. And she was telling about how all the work and time she put into Romans. And she said, I went through and just looked at all the Hebrew stuff in there. Just take all the talk to the Greeks out and just talk about everything that's said, rehearsed about the Hebrew part. All the scriptures that reference back to the old Hebrew. You just read through those. And so it's just a whole theme in itself, if you go through there. So she's digging into my point. She's digging into it to see what's inside the book. Digging into it. We don't just blast through this stuff. Reading to comprehend. Back in Ezra and Nehemiah's day, all the people assembled and they stood while the book of the law was being read to them. Y'all remember that part from there? This is the next day after that. And they came back the next day. On the second day, the heads of the father's household, all the people, the priests, and the Levites gathered Ezra the scribe that they might gain insight, the text says, into the word. Gain insight. So that's a lesson I think we can get, not only for us, but for those who are old enough that you're teaching, that they need to start learning to understand what they're reading. Remember the eunuch? Do you understand what you're reading? I need someone to explain it to me. So Jesus there is there with him. We'll go back to the story now. He's there with them and eating. And he says, you know, they don't realize he is the spirit. Ask for food. Does the spirit, if he's a ghost, does the spirit eat and drink and understand and these kind of things? So he's trying to get them gradually to see who he is. So he rebukes them. And that's a kind of a scary thing that he rebukes them for not believing what they've been told by the others who have seen him. Because they did not believe, though they see him after he'd been risen. Why? Again, we'll get to this more in a minute. But the appearances to others and their testimony and their words are going to be important. Think of that thought a minute. Another slide here, I'll talk about that. So, after this, they accept his resurrection as being fact. He breathes on them. They receive the Holy Spirit. I don't know how this compares to the Holy Spirit and what came on Pentecost. And we'll get into all that tonight. That's a whole separate topic. But that point is made there. And Thomas was not there. So we get this phrase, doubting Thomas. Why is he doubting? Well, the same reason the others had doubted. Okay? In our minds, we get on Thomas, well, he didn't believe. Others didn't believe either. You got to keep that in your mind the whole time. It's not just Thomas. So Thomas said he wouldn't believe till he could actually touch and see the nail scars for himself. The others didn't believe either. Now, over the next 40 days before his ascension, this is going to kind of stick a slide in here, and then we'll kind of come back to the story here. He's going to appear to the apostles a week later, seven disciples by the Sea of Galilee, 500 brethren at once, and James, all are listed as separate over the next, between now and the time he's going to the ascension. And we'll kind of get back to these in a minute, but I just want to get that in. There's going to be a lot of it. A lot of appearances come in. The apostles then, when he gave the Great Commission and ascended back to heaven. So a week later, Jesus appears with them again, and Thomas is there with them this time. And you know the story, you've been through it. So Jesus appears in there, the door's locked, so how did he get in? Well, he's a ghost, he can hit him through the wall, right? No, there's a ghost, doesn't eat and drink. He tells Thomas to touch him and believe. You want to touch me? To know it, who it is? Well, here I am, touch me and believe. Thomas didn't have to touch him. My Lord and my God. He knew who he was. He recognized it. And now his unbelief is gone. Thomas now believes. And then we have this passage. And we'll go get to it at the end of class again. But let's now the first part particularly. Jesus said to him, Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen me and believe. Now, I got the question mark up there because some translations make that first part a question as opposed to a statement. I don't know which one, what you've got, how it's in there, but there are some who put a question mark there, some put a statement. So read it that way. Thomas, because you've seen me, you've believed. Blessed are those who have not seen me yet believe. If you put the question mark there. You believe because you've seen me? Blessed are those who believe who haven't seen me. Or just Thomas, because you've seen me, you believe. Blessed are those who have not seen me yet believe. Anyway, it's the same point, whether it's a question mark or not. But I want to bring it out because some translations have it one way and some the other. So now we're going to Galilee. Over and over, they had talked about Jesus would meet them in Galilee. They told the women that early on that he would meet them in Galilee. Tell them to meet me in Galilee. So now they're in Galilee. By the way, it is the New Revised Standard that puts a question mark there, just in case you haven't had it. So at the Sea of Galilee, Peter and some of the others have gone back to their old occupation and gone out fishing. They've been fishing all night. They haven't caught anything. So this man on the shore says, cast your net off on the right side of the boat. But he kind of got to put it again. Okay, I'm a fisherman. I've been fishing all night and I haven't caught anything yet. And you want me to do it again? Okay, so he does. They've cast it on the right side of the boat. The net was so full, they couldn't pull them in with fish. What's the reaction going to be? Who could tell us to do that? And it happened like that, except Jesus himself. It's the Lord. They recognize who it is. It's because of the miracle he's done. So Jesus was cooking breakfast and invited them to come and eat with him there. It's the third time. He's appeared to them, the apostles, since the resurrection. Without Thomas, with Thomas, and now this appearance here. He asked Peter three times, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? And every time Peter replies, yes, I do, Lord. And he says, feed or tend my sheep. Now, why three times? I don't know why three times. There's a lot of speculation that he asked him that three times because Peter had denied him three times. So he asked him three times about, do you love me? I don't know if there's a connection there between the two or not, but that is looked at sometimes that way. So then Jesus, I'm going to go back and Google this, and I forgot it this afternoon. Jesus talked about to Peter about the type of death he would die. If I remember secular history correctly, Peter died in a crucifixion upside down. No, don't bank on that. I meant to go back and refresh it this afternoon to be sure, but that's what's been stuck in my mind, that he would not be crucified like his Lord. So he won't be crucified upside down. So you might Google that sometime and check on it. But I think that's what I remember from time past. This is the one I want to talk about. 1 Corinthians 15, we know, is the chapter on the resurrection. And Paul defends the fact that Christ is raised from the dead. Otherwise, if he hadn't been raised from the dead, our faith is vain, our hope is in vain, everything. But he is risen, Paul says. He lists out then, after he starts talking about the death, burial, and resurrection, he starts listing all of these appearances Jesus made to the different people. One event over 500 at once, appeared to James, later to Paul himself. Christ is risen. That's the point Paul's making in 1 Corinthians 15. So why list all these appearances? That's the point I want to get to now. Why is it important? Is it important that all these appearances be listed that we've been talking about some last week and again tonight? What if we didn't have the appearances? Well, there was no record in the scriptures about Jesus being seen after the resurrection. Now what? You can see the importance of stressing this to your class, that Jesus not only was raised, people saw him, and those people are testifying to us they saw him. How do you know Chicago exists? Some of y'all have probably been there. How do you know it's there? Well, because somebody that knows, has seen it, told me it was there. And I believe them. Or you take any kind of illustration you want to. Appearances and testimony is significant. Also, we got to think that at this point, Christ is risen, so what? Satan's defeated. Go back to Genesis 3:15, the very early part of scriptures themselves. When Christ died, it looked like Satan had won, right? But now that he's risen, conquered death, put down Satan. Satan is defeated. Jesus has crushed his head. So, a couple lessons. He rebuked them, their unbelief, because they did not believe those who had seen him after the resurrection. The testimony of these people who saw him is crucial to our belief, to our understanding, to our acceptance that Christ is risen from the dead. Okay? So when sufficient evidence has been presented, I've got to draw that conclusion. Now your students have got to draw that conclusion. That yes, Christ died, he was buried, he rose. How do I know he rose? All these people saw him. Be sure you get that point across to them, that people saw him at the resurrection, and they have written it, and they have told us, and we believe it because of that evidence. Let's go back to this verse we looked at earlier. Blessed are those who have not seen me, yet have believed. Who is that? Who are the ones that haven't seen him, and yet believe? But that's us, okay? Look what it said about him. Truly, Jesus had many other signs from the presence of the disciples, were not written in this book, but what? These are written that you may believe, that we may believe, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and believing you, we, may have life in his name. Get that to your students. This is important, okay? Why did Jesus do all these miracles? Why is all this stuff recorded for us? Why we got it written down? Why do we believe the testimony of these people? It's important to us. These things are written that we haven't seen Jesus. Blessed are those who believe and haven't seen him. And what's the results of it? These are all written down. This testimony is written down for us, that we might believe that he is the Son of God, and because of that belief, we have life in his name. One more point about 1 Corinthians 15. I kind of alluded to it a bit earlier. In the context of these appearances, Paul has said, I preach to you the gospel, which you believe and you've held on to. If indeed you believe, and he talks about the death, the burial, and the resurrection. The core part of the gospel. Right behind that is when he puts these appearances. Okay? This is the core part. You've got to understand the death, the burial, and the resurrection. And to prove the resurrection, Paul goes right behind that, the first part of 1 Corinthians 15, and lists the fact that the appearances were there. And so that's all I've got. We've got about 10 minutes left. So, yes, I will turn it off.